Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is Podcast 905B, and we have a returnee. He was so outstanding the last time. I can't wait to have him back. He is Jonathan Deutsch, the Professor, Center for Food and Hospitality Management, the Department of Nutrition Sciences at Drexel University in Philadelphia. And yes, I got to talk to him a little bit about Philadelphia since my son and his wife and my granddaughter, my only granddaughter, live in Philadelphia and work and teach at Penn, a rival institution but neighboring. So Dr. Deutsch, it's a privilege. We're going to talk about, I hope, the new and emerging food trends from the Summer Fancy Food Show in San Francisco.
In this summer show is in New York. The winter is in San Francisco. And I only attended the New York one, but great products and lots to talk about there.
Well, let me tell you, so we have a meeting, that is the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute has a preventive medicine meeting in Las Vegas every year. And every year we always have three food choices for the luncheon menus. And we always ask for one that is, if you will, vegan and healthy, absolutely healthy. And this year, for the first time, we saw they offered us cauliflower steaks. Is that one of the new trends? Is that, I mean, if it made it to Las Vegas, it must be a new trend that's going across the country, or are they just very far out in front?
Cauliflower is very much on trend this year. We saw it all over the show. You know, of course, it's a little bit of marketing, right, to take something that's been around for hundreds or thousands of years and a good part of the diet and say it's trendy. But what we're seeing is there's a lot more interest in celebrating vegetables for what they are. You know, of course, vegetarian entrees have been around forever. But at a banquet like you attended at a medical conference, you know, even a decade ago, the vegetarian option might have been, you know, a pasta with a sauce or something like that. And the vegetables would have been sort of a bit player. And what we're seeing is something like a cauliflower steak where the vegetable is the main center of plate item. Even in non-vegetarian settings, meat might be an accent or a flavor, is a big trend that we saw throughout the show. And we saw things, cauliflower is a great carrier for other things. So we even saw ice cream that had what they called hidden cauliflower puree to add some fiber and some vitamins, some health content. But to carry other flavors.
So one of the things that I want to ask you about is how much of a trend is health in food versus indulgence in food and versus other things? I don't even know how to explain them in my limited vocabulary for food.
Well, one thing I would say is that I don't think those are mutually exclusive. Something can be healthy and indulgent. And, you know, I think a good example of something like that would be a really good dark chocolate or a really good glass of red wine in moderation, right? We know that there are health benefits to these foods. We know that they're supremely indulgent, and we know that you can overindulge, right? So it's about finding sort of that balance in food. And I would say that this year in particular, healthy foods, healthy indulgences, functional foods, foods that are not only delicious, but do something good for you, for your body, were sort of all the rage at the show this year. You know, the counterpart to that and something that consumers need to watch out for is there are a lot of foods that have what we call a health halo in food marketing, which means it's not necessarily healthy, but it connotes healthfulness or implies healthfulness. And when you really closely examine it, maybe it's not so healthy after all. So that's also something to watch out for.
Now, let me, I love both healthy and indulgent. And in fact, on the cover of a new book I have that's coming out in January, What to Eat When, is a clock, and in the clock are both dark chocolate and wine, and red wine, or in wine. And so I love those choices. Is that getting to be a trend? In other words, the health halo, how far are people going and are they keeping it to, how do we spot which is really healthy and which just has the health halo, as you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to look at the ingredients and really ask yourself whether you want this. You know, it's sort of a mindful eating idea, right? Do I really want these ingredients inside my body? And what are they going to do for me? How are they going to metabolize? So, you know, a great example would be an artificially sweetened beverage. Those are typically marketed as, you know, this is a beverage that has no calories and therefore it's healthy. You know, that's a great example of the health halo in action. Whereas if you really look at it and you look at the ingredients, you might say, I don't really feel comfortable putting these ingredients that maybe I'm not that comfortable with. I can't pronounce. I certainly don't need them to live, and my body doesn't need them for fuel or for really nutrition or any function. That would be a good example of a health halo that is really not deserved, but it comes from marketing. Whereas if you look at a product and you say, okay, you know, what's actually in a glass of red wine? You know, yes, there are sugars and calories and things and alcohol and nutrients that I should enjoy in moderation. But there also may be some health benefits and it's also providing calories which my body needs, right? So you know, making those decisions and being a little bit thoughtful about where we're sourcing our energy in the form of calories is really what it's all about.
Now, you also talk about another trend that I haven't seen yet, but talk to us about upcycled products.
Upcycled products are something I mentioned last year at this time as sort of an emerging trend at the show. And this year it was really in full force, which makes me very happy. And upcycled, basically, upcycled is a term that is probably most often found in the fashion industry. And it's, you know, an example would be take a few pairs of old worn out jeans and make a dress out of them or a jacket out of them, right? So instead of recycling them, you're actually creating something new. And when it's applied to food, it typically means surplus food or food that otherwise would be waste. And there were some really interesting products this year. Probably the best and most familiar example would be products that are made from spent grain from beer brewing. So when you make beer, when you brew beer, yeast ferments the grain, and that's what produces the alcohol, and that's what allows you to brew beer. And following that brewing, typically that grain is either fed to animals, composted, or otherwise discarded. And a few companies, there's one called Regrain based in San Francisco that's making granola bars from that spent grain. There was one brand called Rise Products at the show this year, which is making stone ground barley flour that's used from that grain, because there's still a lot of nutrition and a lot of value in those products. And rather than producing more and using more and more farmland and more resources to make more food, we can also look at the food we have. Another example is from Philabundance, which is our food bank in Philadelphia. They're making something called Abundantly Good Spiced Tomato Jam. And what they're using for that is, if you think about it, there are a lot of sliced tomatoes used throughout the country in fast food restaurants, sandwich shops, anywhere you have tomatoes on a sandwich. And you only get the middle of that tomato. That nice round full circle is what people want to see on their burger. So all the narrow parts above that near the stem and all the narrow parts below that near the bottom of the tomato are typically composted. And so Phil Abundance worked with a company called Baldor Specialty Foods, which cuts those tomatoes to just use those tops and bottoms that otherwise would have been waste, and made a jam from that, and are now working on a tomato sauce product as well in collaboration with us, the Drexel Food Lab. So there's a lot more attention. I would say that was a top trend this year, upcycled as a category in general.
Now, just out of curiosity, is there, it would seem to me that in some of these products, what is would ordinarily be discarded, such as the tomato, if you will, stems and ends, might actually have more nutrients and be healthier for you than everything, as opposed to than the rest of the tomato, as opposed to some of the others, such as spent grain. You can say, well, maybe a bunch of the B vitamins leaked out of those and they're less nutritious. Is there any good data on the contrast between those?
Yeah, there is. I mean, this is one of those like only in America moments, right? Where we have an entire industry that the product that I think epitomizes this are those little football shaped baby carrots that nutritionists love because it gets kids eating carrots. But any consumer, any nutritionist, any chef knows, you know, most of the nutrients, the highest nutrient density in a plant is found near the peel, right? And we have a whole industry devoted to removing those peels and giving us, you know, cut, clean produce. And often that those nutrient-dense parts are just composted or discarded. So one of the cool products I saw is called Rind Snack. And they're it's dried fruit, but they actually leave the skin on, so you're getting the whole fruit. You know, things like the kiwi peels, which most people don't know are perfectly edible and actually delicious. They add some tartness, and they add a good amount of fiber, and that's staying in the fruit in that case. Another one that I thought was brilliant, and a lot of people look for fish oil as a health a component of a healthy diet. Same thing, a lot of the oils in fish are found in the skin or near the skin. So there was a company that was actually making salmon skin crackers, so dried seasoned salmon skin, very rich, fatty, with fish oil. So if you're looking for, again, that sort of healthy indulgent snack or that functional indulgence, I thought that was a really cool approach. And again, using something that would otherwise just have been a cost environmentally and to the company of financially of food waste.
So so this seems like a couple of the trends. Let's go over some of the others, because I guess there must be more than that. What is Filipino cuisine like, and what is goth food like?
Okay, so we did see quite a bit of food from the Philippines. That's a category that's been around for a while as a trend. And of course, you know, people from the Philippines and people in the Philippines have been eating these dishes for hundreds of years or more, but there's been a lot more attention on the Filipino cuisine and Filipino flavors in sort of mainstream U.S. food markets. So one of the big products that was a pretty popular flavor this year was calamansi, which is a fruit that's sort of in everything in the Philippines, isn't as well known outside. And has become a flavor in beverages and desserts and marinades and all sorts of products, and is really delicious. And a lot of I think what we saw in previous years was sort of Pan-Asian you know, Asian style flavors become very popular among mainstream food brands. And I think now there's a lot more cultural awareness and a lot more interest in specificity in those flavors. So learning about the foods of Cambodia, learning about the foods of Laos, learning about the foods of the Philippines, and being more specific rather than something saying something as sort of a generic, you know, Asian flavor, which sort of reduces, you know, a vast diversity of cultures and people and cuisines and experiences into one word. I think consumers are getting savvy and questioning that.
It is so interesting. Now, you also mentioned some other trends. Tell us your next three or four things that you think and which one surprised you.
Okay, sure. You know, one of the big surprises I thought was I think the pendulum is finally shifting away from sugar-sweetened beverages. You know, we've seen a lot of activity in the public health world sort of taxing and discouraging and doing anything they could to get people off of sugar-sweetened beverages. And one thing I saw as a big trend was very sophisticated flavored beverages, but either unsweetened or lightly sweetened. And I think that idea, you know, we've all seen the equivalent of how many spoonfuls of sugar are in a traditional, you know, can of soda or something like that. And we're seeing a lot of sugar reduction in beverages, which is encouraging for health-minded folks. We talked about upcycles, but sustainable products, I think, in general, were a big trend. One of the companies that got a lot of attention there is called One for Neptune, looking at sustainable seafood snacks and you know, looking at the parts of the fish that are typically not sold as fish fillets, the tail end and other cuts, and they made a delicious fish jerky that was sort of the talk of the show because people were surprised that something like a fish jerky would be delicious. Another one that got a lot of attention was from Ocean Hugger Foods, and it's a imitation sushi tuna. So it's a bright red thing that looks exactly like the tuna you would have on top of a nigiri, but it's made from compressed tomato. So as we have a lot more pressure, it's sort of a soy sauce seasoned, lightly seasoned tomato. As we get much more pressure on our fisheries and you know, seafood is constantly under threat, looking at, you know, being a lot more thoughtful about our seafood consumption, and diversifying the experience through something like a compressed tomato, I thought was really clever. You can make vegan sushi, but even people like me who are omnivorous would be happy with the experience of having, you know, especially for a casual, you know, quick bite lunch sushi. We're not talking about an elaborate omakase. You can get that kind of experience through a vegetarian item. I thought was really clever.
It sounds wonderful. Now, there's one other trend we've got to ask you about, just because it's so much in the news, and that is the adding cannabinoids or cannabinoid oils to food. What do you think of this, and is it likely to become a trend?
I think it's already a trend. I think I would call it an emerging trend. I recently stayed in a hotel which had a whole separate room service menu for CBD oil relaxing food service item. So we're seeing a lot more of it. I would say we're not quite there yet in terms of mainstream, but I think in states like Nevada, California, Colorado, we're going to see this this trend grow very quickly into not just packaged goods, but also restaurants, food service, somewhat unexpected places.
So if you had to say one thing that you were surprised by other than the, the fish jerky, and that you think if I come to Philadelphia, will be in Philadelphia in more than one spot, what would it be next year?
Huh, that's a great question. I would say this upcycled trend was the one that really emerged and I think has tremendous potential. I think, you know, the conventional wisdom in the food industry was we don't want to make things from surplus food or food that would otherwise be waste, because if consumers find out about it, they're going to freak out that we're selling them, you know, what might have been our garbage, right? Or that we're going to have to discount it so heavily. And what we're finding through our research and what we're seeing at the show is that consumers will actually pay more and value this food, because between a third and 40% of food is wasted, and it's closer to 40% in the U.S. And that food is, you know, it's resource intensive to produce and store and transport and retail. And we also are dealing with a growing population that's going to need more and more food. So rather than worrying so much about increasing production to make enough food to feed everyone, if we can couple that with saying we're already producing beautiful food, how do we keep it in the food supply? How do we keep nutrition and people and out of the trash can? I think we're going to see a lot more, not only acceptance, but embracing of these products, and not just as a sort of food recovery soup kitchen. Let's feed people who don't have enough to eat with our excess, which is certainly important. But beyond that, saying, let's embrace this. We have one planet. We're all in this together. Let's use the food we're already producing to its fullest extent, full product utilization, before worrying about what else we can grow and taking more and more farmland and more resources to grow this food.
Wonderful interview. We're talking with Jonathan Deutsch, D-E-U-T-S-C-H, a professor in the Center for Food and Hospitality Management, the Department of Nutrition Sciences at Drexel University. You can learn more about his work at drexel.edu/FHM for Food Hospitality Management. Thanks, Jonathan, and hopefully you'll come on again after the next of the great, what I would call fancy food shows, and keep us informed. I love it. And I will be eating in Philadelphia this fall again, because that's how I get to see my granddaughter. So I will hopefully visit your fabulous city. And I look forward to that trend that you say is so interesting to me. It's so interesting, upcycled products, using food that may actually be better for you because of the part that isn't, that is, if you will, from what normally wouldn't show in a sandwich. By the way, one of these times I'm going to have to ask you, so some of these places must produce huge amounts of waste, such as if you look at the tomatoes used on, for example, something like a hamburger, they must have a lot of the inner parts of the tomato. Do they reuse them routinely, or is that part of what this is?
Well, that's part of what it is. It's really looking at, we developed something with some colleagues at Penn and Cabrini University called the Food System Sensitive Model. And basically what that does is it says, let's not just look at where the market is, which is what a lot of food production does. They say, what do you want to buy? What do I have? And I'll sell it to you. But it's also saying, okay, I understand that you want this part of the product, but where in this, without adding an additional factory, without adding a lot of capital costs, where can you take those other aspects, the part you're leaving behind? You know, in the case of tomatoes, the tops and bottoms, and in the case of portobello caps, you know, the mushroom stem, and how do we get those into products, right? And in a way that at the same time, people might be buying, you know, premium products that they're just going to chop up or just puree anyway, right? So matching the supply to the demand of not just the best and most polished food, but all of the food in the food supply is the goal.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I look forward to talking with you more, and I can't thank Darian enough for great engineering, but I especially want to thank you, the listener, for downloading us and having faith in us. The last week's guest, of course, was the great Gregory Petsko, and we have and if you haven't listened to that interview on how to decode medical studies, that was 904B. Please do. It is fantastic. He was a superb guest, just as Jonathan Deutsch was this week. And I hope you'll tune in and download us every week and rate us. Tell your friends about us. 51,000 of you can't all be wrong. Thanks very much for doing it. And look forward to talking with you again next week on this podcast.